Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Baldhead Radio. I am your host, Brett Crewson, and tonight I have a guest. Okay, listen, I've been working on this one. Okay, let me give you a little background. When I book guests, sometimes I can have a guest on within a week. Sometimes it takes a couple weeks, sometimes a month. This one, believe me, for many, many reasons, I'm going to say it took at least 2 years for us to get this done. And tonight's the night. We've both been wanting to do this and looking forward to it, and now it's happening. So very, very cool. I'm very excited about this. And, wow, yeah, let me take a breath. Tonight, my guest, listen, I've known her for a long, long time, and we'll get into that as well, how we met and what have you. But her name is Heather Joel. She is from Madrid, Spain. And she is multi-talented. She does a lot of different things with her time. And so many things to talk about, of course, one of which, you know, obviously is her involvement with the Chinese bird watchers. That she is a lead vocalist and writer with the Chinese bird watchers. This is just one of the things that we'll be talking about this evening. So without further ado, and before I ramble on and make a fool out of myself, Heather, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
Awesome. How are you doing tonight?
I'm pretty good. I just wanted to clarify that I'm actually not from Spain. I'm from California, but I'm visiting from Spain, where I've lived for the past 12 years.
Okay, right. You know what? I just that tripped over my own tongue during my little... You like my intro? That was pretty cool, huh? You like that?
Yeah.
So you are actually an American, living abroad, as they say, in Spain, and 12 years you've been there, yes. So okay, you've got 3 albums together now with the Chinese bird watchers, and of course it didn't start so beautifully as we can hear on the CDs and think, wow, you know, a lot of people don't know what goes on in creating something like this. The humble beginnings, let's start there. How did the whole thing get started?
Well, in Spain, I have friends that are musicians, and one of them is Jorge Sierra, and he was teaching a class in the University of Madrid, a music class based with electronic music that Nacho, the singer of the Birdwatchers, was taking in his degree. And they met that way, and Nacho plays some of his music to Jorge, who really liked it, and they started recording. And then Jorge then asked his brother, Raul Sierra, they're twins, to play on the project. And then he asked me if I would be interested in doing background vocals. And I said yes, because as soon as I heard Nacho's lyrics, I fell in love, because we're a group based in Spain, but all the songs are written in English, and I fell in love with his writing ability and the composition of the songs. And then later, Iria, the violinist, who's also from Spain, was incorporated into the group as well.
All right, nice. And I got to say, you know, when I first started listening to the Chinese Birdwatchers, when I started getting hints of this music that's coming out from Spain, I took a listen to it, and I thought, you know, I figured I would hear something like flamenco or something like that, you know, coming out of Spain, me being, you know, the ignorant American, so to speak. Okay, let's listen to some of this and see what it sounds like. It has, especially on the first album, the EP, a very decidedly South American, Southwestern kind of feel in some of the tracks. Not all of them, but a few of them, to where you're like, this is interesting, you know, this is... Because I am from the American Southwest, and it has that vibe, that feel, and that, you know what I mean? How did that come about with, you know, with the writing process?
Well, Nacho already had a lot of his songs written and composed before the Chinese Birdwatchers. Well, he had the name the Chinese Birdwatchers before all of us even met and collaborated together. However, he didn't have all the compositions of the other instrumentation or backing vocals with his songs. So I don't know, I can't speak for him in terms of his sound, but musically, I think just the differences in our musical styles and the collaboration that we made the songs to sound that way, but I think our music started sounding more folky and country later on during the second CD. But mm-hmm. I just think a lot of it has to do with the connection with the people who have their own influences and their own musical styles and tastes that sort of kind of get pushed together and are very complementary. But it wasn't
truly,
like we sat down and we said, we want to have this style of music. It just sort of happened. We didn't really sit down and talk about it, which is why the first CD, which I can barely remember the songs on it. I know that we have the song Underwater Lovers, and that has like a real Tarantino type of sound to it. Kind of surfer, rockabilly, even a bit of like country folk going on in there. But that's like a really uplifting powerhouse song that everybody falls in love with. But it was just really Raul on guitar and Jorge on bass and Idia, she plays the violin on that song like amazingly, beautifully. And I think it was just sort of what we did together and without it being discussed.
And the cool thing about that particular track, it, like you said, it has that kind of, as you said, Tarantino kind of Southern California surfer kind of vibe. I love that track because of that feel. But having Idia being able to incorporate her skills on the violin into that type of song was beautiful, because I don't think I've ever heard anything like that before.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about the violin, and a lot of people are really surprised when they come see us live, because they see she works with all the pedals and the delays and how she has amplification. And a lot of people refer to the violin as either just a classical sound and with its origins, and also with just an accent to music and a more folky or country type of style. But with Idia,
I call her
like the Slash of the violin. She's our Slash of the group,
mm-hmm.
like Guns N' Roses Slash, because she really rocks out and sweats, and her arrangements are really just very electric.
You know, it's funny,
and so
because
she's not just an accent. She's like she has her main part.
She moved into more of the forefront. And on the performance aspect, because I've seen a lot of your live performances that are available all over the place. So anybody who is internet savvy can find them on YouTube. They're all over the place. And by the way, they're awesome. You guys live are great, but I watched Idia, and you're right. She is like this front man almost. Instead of a guitar, she has her violin, and she gets into it like she starts rocking out and stuff. And it's amazing to watch her. Here's one of my biggest questions. And if I ever talk to her, probably one of the biggest things I'm going to ask her is, like, how do you keep your hair from getting caught between your bow and the strings? Like, how does that happen? Is it just a lot of practice to keep that from happening?
Well, that's funny, because originally, when years ago, we've been a group for 8 years now, and originally she had always worn her hair up. She's got really long hair, and she would wear it up. And so we didn't have an issue. She didn't have an issue with that. But now, you know, she's been wearing it down a lot more. And well, she has cut quite a bit of it. She's cut a lot of it off. But she definitely has to sort of move around a lot. And sometimes we get nervous, like watching her play, because it looks like it's going to get caught in her bow. And that, I think, you know, you just know your instrument. You know how to work around it, no?
I guess so, and evidently she's been playing for a long time, because she pulls it off.
Well, she started at 8.
Wow.
She was 8 years old
when
she started playing, and she studied at conservatory. So I think you just know. It's like driving. You know how to drive, and you know how to play guitar. You know, it's like second nature for her. In terms of her being her presence on the stage is really well, first of all, she's an extremely capable player, and secondly, she is absolutely gorgeous, and she's very stoic when she plays. And I think that because of her arrangements and the incorporation into the songs that she has, she is supposed to be one of the front men, because I don't believe that just the vocalists should be seen as a front man, because all music is language being communicated to the public. And she's definitely communicating emotion and sensation with her music. So in terms of the guitarist, Raul, and Idia, they have found a balance throughout the years of, well, who plays this solo and how to compromise on that without one falling short of the other. So in our group, I feel like we have like four front men, and us four, Nacho and myself, the two singers, and Raul and Iria, we're all pretty much just like in a straight line next to each other, which also creates a great dynamic to play around with each other live. There's more animation between us. There's a lot more fun going on the stage for us.
Oh, yeah. And you can definitely see that in a lot of these live clips that you can find, you know, all over the internet. I mean, you guys, listen, in certain worlds, you have blown up. And at this point, you have your third album out, which, listen, as a fan, I'm not going to say one is I prefer over another, because another unique thing that I've discovered with the Chinese Birdwatchers is your versatility styles of what you play and what you write. Each album, of course, you have the EP, which was originally released, and it's got six tracks on it. That's why I call it
which
an EP.
Nobody really has. That's something that we
exactly.
never published, that we just sold or gave away at the beginning of our shows, but we never released it for the public to buy.
At least on a physical copy.
Well, yes, and some of those songs on the EP weren't released at all, because, for example, one of the songs, Rubber Ball, I wasn't happy with the results of that recording, and I said I'd like to hold off on it and do some more writing on it. I added a bridge, and I added an ending, and I added some to the chorus as well, and then that was recorded on our second CD called El Duelo, which means a standoff in English, or when you're in mourning over the loss of something. So Rubber Ball is on the EP, but it didn't make it on the first CD. It made it on the second one.
Okay. You know what? It's been a while, but now that you brought that up, I'm going to listen to, in the future, both tracks side by side so I can actually hear the difference. Because once El Duelo came out, I haven't listened to the EP a whole lot after that, to be honest, because El Duelo was recorded in a different studio with different equipment, and mastering was much different. And we don't need to get into technical aspects about that, of course. And then most recently, I won't say real recently, but last year, Rhodes was released, your third debut. We are content professionals here at Bald Head Radio. This is what we do here. Your third CD, your third release, which is amazing because, again, different studio, different sound with your writing styles and musical styles, lyrically. Of course, I'm going to say, there are a lot of great tracks on here. Rhodes, the title track, is, of course, my favorite. It, again, has a very South American, Southwestern feel to it. I've talked with you in the past. Of course, it's the first time I've had it on my show, but we did discuss about lyrically. You don't like to discuss your lyrics.
Oh, well, I don't mind discussing the lyrics or maybe the process in which they're written. However, I don't necessarily like to interpret the song and what they mean, at least for me. I don't know about Nacho, but, everybody has their own interpretation of everything, right? So,
right. It's
a
best
lot of
to leave it open
I
to
feel,
yeah, best to leave it open
yeah,
to
I just,
interpretation.
Yeah, because everybody has their own life and their own experiences and what they can get out of music. And I don't really want to explain word for word what it meant. And it's also personal. It's like reading a diary. I mean, I'm putting it out there lyrically, and I'm giving an interpretive sense to it with the videos, which are like mini movies to me, like
mm-hmm.
short, which add a whole nother flavor and layer to the song, which I think is really important. But I don't necessarily talk about what it meant to me, what experience I lived through those lyrics.
Like a personal thing. Because you want it to be a personal experience to the listener.
Well, and I figure it's personal enough writing about it and putting it out there. It's quite personal. So really, they'd have to dig in pretty deep if they want real specifics, which I think that, you know, those lines for me, I don't really cross.
Yeah.
Now, if it was a dear friend or family or something they really wanted to know, then no problem. But I wouldn't really, like, explain that, you know, through a microphone or something in a concert or an interview.
True, true. And I'm going to segue with that. Actually, we're going to get into the area of the music videos that you've put together with the Chinese Bird Watchers. And I want to specifically talk about one in particular, which I think, I mean, I love all the videos that you guys have put out. They're professionally done. They're beautifully edited and filmed. Several different photographers have filmed different videos to give them different types of feels. Like, there's a difference between Rubber Ball, you know, and what was the other one that was really good? I think it was on your first album. Hold on here. Let me see.
The black and white video?
The black and white one, which was Speak to Me.
Dear Leonard. No, that was Dear Leonard.
Dear Leonard. I'm sorry. Yeah, Dear Leonard. My bad. So you can see not only the different style, the difference between the style of the music and how it feels, but also with the way the video looks and how that feels. But the one I want to talk about actually is 64 Nova. Now, that video is very, very cool. And from what I understand, it was filmed on two different continents.
Yeah, I filmed with a friend here with just a hand camera. And that was in the back seat and the front seat of my father's car, which is a 64 Nova. And I learned to drive in that car, and it's very symbolic to me. And I wanted my father in the video, too, because it's a song I wrote for him about us, mm-hmm. about life on the road on a 64 Nova. And so we filmed that here on the Pacific Coast Highway and that area around here in the daytime. The second half,
Southern California.
We filmed in Southern California, yeah. And the second half, we filmed in Madrid with the rest of the group at night to give it a contrast in a town called Segovia, which is where we filmed Rubber Ball, which is a video with horses. We filmed it on a ranch there. So we had mm-hmm. two different sides of the story and two different coasts, two different continents and two different like day and night.
Oh, yeah. And the beautiful thing about it is that not just the way it was filmed and two different filming styles, by the way, because you had a different director of photography for the California shoot versus the director of photography for the Madrid shoots. Okay. So but they were meshed together in such a way that they blended very well to the eye. It didn't really take you out of it.
That's because the film crew, Bacon and Cheese Films, they are in Madrid, and they also filmed Rubber Ball, and they edit very well, and they create a great storyboard. And, well, mm-hmm. the Chinese Bird Watchers, we have to work really hard and many hours. Sometimes we're freezing. Sometimes we're hot to complete it. So it takes a lot of teamwork, and it takes a lot of patience and not erupting out in some type of panic or, I don't know, you just have to be. It's like being an actor. It really is. I never really respected actors as much as I do now, having done these really complicated videos, because on the average, each video that we've filmed together as a group, mm-hmm. they've taken about 12 hours or maybe two different days, 9 or 10 hours each day. So it's quite a process. And a lot of the thing about having a great video is not just the filming and the storyboard, but it's about editing. And so mm-hmm. when we filmed the part of the Pacific Coast Highway here, we had to then pretend like it's filmed in a Super 8 camera mode to give it that old
yeah.
feel.
Which is a hard thing to do when you're in the digital world.
Yeah.
Again, I don't even need to get into the technicals of it, but from a filmmaking perspective, you know, I have a lot of guests on that are filmmakers and whatnot, mostly in the independent film market, and we talk about that a lot, but to try to find that, especially like Super 8, that analog feel. And, you know, the editing was done so well with that video. And I hate to keep on bringing up 64 Nova, but I just want to ask you again, with the Madrid shoot, you guys are out in the middle of nowhere, out in the countryside, on this long gravel-covered road, and it starts in the evening and ends up at night. Now, was that
it doesn't
all,
end up at night. Was
it one continuous shoot that you just had to do, or was it done in several different days?
No, it was done in one shoot, and we got to the site at, well, keeping in mind, in the summer, I think we did it in spring, and the sunset in the spring is about, I would say, 8:30 at night, and we got there around 7:30, set up, and we didn't finish shooting until about 8:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I was sleeping in the car between the hours of 2:30 in the morning and 5 with my break while the others were being filmed. And then I had to wake up, fix my makeup in the rearview car mirror, and then go out again at sunrise and film the rest of the part of the video. So it was pretty rough.
Dude, that's like, you know what they call roughing it? I mean, it's not like you had a trailer, you know, and a crew, and a makeup person, and all this other stuff. You were sleeping in a car during the break. I remember you had told me once that by the end of the shoot, you were so exhausted, but in the video, you can't even tell.
You're working, and you know that you have to just put all those bodily functions and tiredness and grumpiness and you're hungry, whatever, aside if you have a vision and you want to complete it. And that, to me, film is something where you can't only hear it, you see it. So if you can't control yourself and you can't keep yourself in check, then you're definitely going to suffer for the rest of your life, because you have the visual result of that video the rest of your life. And whenever you watch it, you're going to watch those moods. So you have to keep yourself real clear and in check.
Oh yeah. Because something like that will be well documented, like forever, you know,
but in terms of no makeup artist,
now.
In terms of the aesthetics of most of our videos, the Chinese Bird Watchers were really big on aesthetic, which doesn't mean we're vain. It just means we love aesthetics. And it's a big part of our talents, I would say. Each and every one of us, we're very opinionated, and we really talk about what aesthetics we're looking for, et cetera. We do our own wardrobe. We do our own, Idia and I, we do our own hair and makeup, for example. It's set for on the Dear Leonard black and white video that we could never have done on our own. It was in a film noir type of style in a very beautiful building and with a lot of columns. And I was wearing a dress by a designer called Josep Font. And that's for the designer Del Pozo, which is very famous in Spain. And that dress I was wearing cost 7,000 euro, and it was all made of silk inside and out. So there's no way I would do my own hair and makeup wearing something that grandiose. But all the other videos that we have filmed, everything aesthetic has really been our doing, and we take a lot of pride in that.
I gotta say, you know, when we're speaking about aesthetics for film, okay, and Del Pozo in particular, you had done when was this? 2012, okay? You were invited to the Mercedes-Benz Fashion Week in Madrid, which is a huge gala, as they say, a huge event. That video was awesome because it wasn't like featuring you guys. It was more like you were playing the music live, of course, and you had your stage, but the focus was on the models and the clothing line that was walking by back and forth. But you guys did one cover tune, and I can't remember the name of it. Do you know what I'm talking about? You did such an awesome job vocally on that.
It was a French song called Yukali. And
Yukali, exactly.
And so I basically had to translate, well, first of all, it's a song with many verses, and it was way too long to translate, number one, from French to English, and way too long to play. But Josep Font is a big fan of that song, and he requested that we do a cover. So I sang the English parts, and Nacho, being the multi-talented young man he is, he sang the French parts because he's trilingual. Uh-huh. So he was able to do the French parts, and with the violin and the instrumentation, it turned out to be, it sounded like a whole different song than the original, but especially because it was sung in English, most of it.
But it was so awesome. You know, it was like a tribute to the original, the way you guys did it with respect to the original. Even though you did those parts in English, it still had that same awesome feel. And by the way, you nailed those high notes, man.
Thank you. It was a bit operatic at certain points, but I do good fake opera. I've always been a fan of singing my own fake opera. I love it. It's very dramatic, and I love hitting those high notes. I'm a soprano. I've learned through the years to tone it down a bit and sing, well, with Nacho being such a, well, he sings very low, so I've had to learn through the years to meet him, and he's met me in between as well, so we've worked a lot on our vocal styles and everything and our tone, but and our range. So with that song, it was sort of like me being able to sort of break free and do what I love doing, and it's just this sort of dramatic fake opera stuff.
Okay, cool. Now, I'm going to let my listeners know, and some of them will know and some of them will not know, but Miss Heather Joel is my sister.
Oh, by the way, you know, it sounds, yeah, and it sounds like it's like a pin, you can't even hear a pin drop. You sound so close. Do you use AT&T, or it almost sounds like we're in the same house?
You know, it's funny because, you know, I have Verizon, and normally I get crystal clear reception, you know, with any phone call I make. But at the same time, it almost sounds like you're in the next room. It's really odd.
It does feel that way.
Is that just my imagination, or is this some kind of weird cosmic joke? Or are you really in the next room?
Well, I am in the next room. Brett is my brother, and he met me, well, since my birth, because I'm the youngest of the whole family.
Nice. Definitely. We are brother and sister, and we grew up together. And with the musical side of things, and by the way, once that little on the air, live on Bald Head Radio here, we do have our mother listening in right now. Her phone number is on the screen right now. Yes, ma'am.
She's listening?
She is listening.
Hello, mother.
I'm debating whether or not I should put her on the air or not. She's probably freaking out right now, but she is.
No,
listening.
Don't. I'm nervous.
She's been listening for a while. So Mama, we know that you're listening. Thank you very much for tuning in. I won't put you on the air because I know that you would be not too cool with that. So, but please continue.
Well, now that she's listening, I mean, she was a great influence for all of us growing up singing.
Absolutely.
We
come from a musical family.
Yeah, and I was always, remember when she used to sing, she's got an amazing range and just really the highs and lows and the middle pitches, she gets just perfectly. And we would wake up in the morning, our mom never drank coffee in the morning. She never had to have anything to get her going. They were the 45 records. So when we were getting ready for school and she was getting ready for work, we just played the 45s all the time. We'd switch them out. Which song do we want to hear next? And we'd all be singing in the house, in the car, on the weekends, or in the grocery store, always harmonizing in the car with her. So she was a great influence in singing, and it was like part of our family background, really, because it was so prevalent in our everyday lives.
It was a part of our lives growing up. And also, you know, Mom sang in the church choir with Grandma. Her mother, they were in a group called the Jubilaires back in the 1970s, the late 60s and 70s. And so they would go to practice two nights a week and then sing on Sundays. And they even recorded stuff onto reel-to-reel tape, which I believe Mom still has those reel-to-reels. And one day I want to listen to them because I have a reel-to-reel player here. And Mom also has a reel-to-reel player at her house, too. But we've never really gotten out and listened to them. But point being that growing up in our house, it was a musical experience from the time we were very young.
Oh, yeah. And also aesthetically, they really introduced aesthetics to me, at least, because Grandma made all of her clothes. I mean, she was so funky and cool for being a church lady. You know, she was really funky and she pushed the limits of her fashion going into church. You know, she'd wear the real mm-hmm. short skirts with the high go-go boots. And she was such a beautiful energy. And she actually danced and sang on stage, not at church, but in choruses and things like, or not choruses, but in musicals or whatnot. And they were definitely a force to be reckoned with. And they were best friends. And they looked like sisters. And they both had killer fashion. They were so elegant and well put together. And I think that definitely influenced my aesthetic in terms of style and portrayal of when you're singing, you know, how do you want to look and not be too picky about it. But it's nice that people don't see you just wearing jeans and a t-shirt on stage, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's like this episode of Andy Griffith. They had this one guy in town who was a farmer. He's always wearing overalls and you know, whatnot like that. And then they hear him singing and he has this beautiful, deep melodic voice. And it's about what you expect, what kind of sounds you expect to come out of a person who's just dressed as in their everyday clothes and stuff. But you never know what's behind it all. You know, somebody has a talent, you know, like people that sing in the shower, but they're too shy to sing in front of people. Yet they have this amazing voice. And if you ever hear it, you're like, oh, my God, I didn't expect that kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, it's a surprise factor, which is really nice, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. So we grew up in a very musical household. In fact, Grandma, by the way, listeners, in our family, we had kind of a weird thing. When it came to our mother's parents, we called them as children, Gauze and Grandson. They weren't Grandma and Grandpa. And that was just a family kind of thing. I can't remember exactly how that came about. I think it was you when you were little, you couldn't say grandma and you said Gauze.
No, it was Tracy.
Was it Tracy?
Our old brother.
Okay, so mm-hmm. Tracy started it, the oldest brother, yeah. And so when we talk about grandma and grandpa, we actually mean like Gauze and Grandson, which is they were affectionate names. You know, a lot of people like, you know, my stepson, he married his wife and her grandmother, they call her Meemaw. So we have affectionate names for our elders and that's the kind of thing we had too growing up. And as well, you know, Dad, you know, he was in the church choir, and he has a very deep bass voice. He's a bass. And I remember mm-hmm. when we were growing up, he used to do this thing, this one line he'd sing, and we'd always say, Dad, can you sing that line again? And I'm going to do it right here. I'm going to imitate my father from what I remember from when I was a kid. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know what it is?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay. You might remember when I do this. Ready? Hold on. I had to clear the old windpipes out. I'm feeling mighty low. I can't even do it as low as my dad did, but he was a total
I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. He used to do that for me all the time. Like, Dad, hey, can you do that again? And he'd do it. And I was like, my dad has a rumbly bass voice, you know, when he sings.
Well, so we grew up in a family with a lot of musical interests and background. And so growing up singing was like, you know, an automatic. And if you didn't grow up singing in our family, it would be like you're an outcast in some way, because everything we based everything on music. Tracy and Terry, all of us kids sang with Mom and everybody sang. Yeah.
And even I remember Gauze used to come over on Saturday mornings and, you know, the upright piano that we had in the house, Mom still has in her house now, same piano. And Gauze used to teach us how to play piano on that when we were little. She used to sit down on Saturday mornings with us and we had piano lessons, you know, doing your scales over and over. And we're like, man, I don't want to do this. I want to go outside and play, you know. And I remember that too fondly from when I was a kid. Yeah. You're 2 years younger than me, so you may or may not remember that, but we were very little at the time. Yeah. Hello.
I'm here.
Hello. Oh, okay.
I'm
had
here.
A little bit of dead air there. So yeah, we grew up in a musical family, which helped a lot. Now, as we grew older, especially when we were teenagers, you know, each of us kids had our own musical instruments. Our musical tastes, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. And I know we're dating, I'm dating ourselves here, but, you know, like Tracy, he was more into like Kiss. And, but he also introduced me to like the B-52s, which was awesome in the 70s. They were coming up. You know, The Police was a band that Tracy really liked a lot. And, Eddie Money was something that Mom liked a lot back then. We had a lot of different types of music to listen to in our family, you know, a lot of different cool things. And then in the 80s, of course, you were all about Bowie, which was big with you. I remember that. And let's see, what else? Let me think, man, because I remember you and Tammy, our other sister, had different things. You know, like Tammy was all about, like, Boy George back then and stuff like that. We all were into Duran Duran, of course. That was a big one. You know, I was big into, like, synthesizer music and stuff like that, which is why I started, you know, started writing when I was in my late teens. And that's something I always regretted because I kind of put it away in my early 20s. And I'm trying to start to get back into that now. And I'm starting to meet more people now that are going to, you know, hopefully help me get my inspiration back, you know, and start writing again because I really want to do that. It's just... Sometimes
yeah.
I just don't, it's not there. When I sit down with my equipment and I'm just trying to just get that flowing, and but it's like it's a little rusty, but I'm hoping it's like riding a bike. You know, once you start getting into it, doing it, you can get there, you know, and I'm hoping that will happen for me again because I miss it. I really do miss writing.
Well, in terms of the writing process with my project, with the Chinese Bird Watchers or other things, a lot of it is based on commitment, ritual, doing it on a regular basis in any way you possibly can. And so that could be writing a story about a picture you see, people you don't know or people you know. What do you see in the picture? Just write about the image in the picture you see. You don't always have to sit down and write about feelings or thoughts or opinions, because I think that one of the best ways of writing is taking yourself out of yourself and looking at something more objectively, and imagery has definitely helped me a lot. In fact, I go to museums a lot or art galleries to further inspire me, because imagery is very important for me. And so that's the only thing I would recommend for you, is like getting to do something. It could be in the beginning 10 minutes a day. It could be 15 minutes, and then it just, you realize you're getting into the swing of things. You enjoy it. It becomes fun for you, and it's like a part of who you are. And then if you're lucky, you can produce it somehow and make something like, you know, a project out of it, or see it come into fruition. I mean, I'm surprised that I was able to find an amazing group with the Chinese Bird Watchers and record 3 CDs and do as many videos as we have and play so many cool live shows that we played. And it's all very much a blessing. But it's definitely come with a lot of consistency and hard work and a lot of pleasure, but pleasure
yeah.
It doesn't come for free. It comes with work, with everything. So
yeah.
I would just say you have to just start little by little and do it every day.
Yeah, you know, with me, it's like when I used to write music, and this is a long time ago, I'm just going to say that. I won't say how long, but I always wrote instrumentals. I was always comfortable with, you know, electronic music, but not like EDM, you know, kind of music, but expressive electronic music that I had written. I did one tune that was a vocal that I wrote lyrics with and did that whole thing, and I actually recorded that one in a studio, which I still have. But nobody's ever heard it other than close friends or the family from way back then. But, you know, when I'm writing instrumentals, you know, just no lyrics or vocals or anything, it is a different kind of feel because I am coming from the heart. I am coming from an emotional place, positive or, you know, negative or what have you, whatever I'm feeling at that particular time. I express myself through the sound and not the words, you know. So it's a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
and but I just think it's because I got off the horse, you know, a while ago, and I just need to have the courage to get back on the horse and start riding again, you know,
mm-hmm.
riding,
mm-hmm.
writing,
yeah.
same thing, I guess, right? Nice analogy, I guess. We'll see what happens in the future, you know. But also thanks to you, I'm getting involved with other people who are like-minded, and you know. who I think can help me get over that hump, you know, and get back into that feeling of creativity that I've temporarily lost. I think this is going to be a very good thing. So we'll see what comes of that. But I think I got very, very good vibes about that particular aspect of things. You know, I think it's very cool.
Well, there are a lot of creative people out there, and they're in our reach. And I think a lot of it is our intention and what we want to pull in our direction. And I believe in just the power of visualization and the power of, you know, determining what we want in life. And I think that those things come to you when you're ready. So a lot of it is really meditating on it and knowing what you want and the people that you want to pull in your direction. And then they just happen to be there, or they were there the whole time. And then you just see them because now you're more clear in your head of what you want in terms of music or any type of collaboration with people. I really believe that's true.
Exactly. And, you know, I've heard the term said that collaboration is the root of inspiration. You know, when you're around other people, you hear them and their ideas and what they have going on. Hey, let me show you this real quick. And what do you think of that? And I'm like, oh, and then all of a sudden something will pop in my head where I can build off of that. And then you start working together and things just start to happen, you know?
Yeah, in terms of like writing, and Raul and I, we, the guitarist and the composer of the Chinese Bird Watchers, he and I started alone with our own songs that we did, and we were just two people. And when we got involved in the Chinese Bird Watchers, our songs just really amplified a lot. And a lot of it is by joining a lot of people together, and something that you can't do on your own. Now, there are some people who do make their own music on their own, and it sounds really great, but for me, I'm a people person, and I don't play an instrument. I mean, I sing, and I do percussion, but I don't play guitar. I compose, I do the melody, and I do the lyrics, but I do really require other people to work with me to make and to complete a song. So mm-hmm. I always find that collaboration for me is a lot more fun. It takes a lot less pressure off of me, and it just has a different sound because somebody else is bringing their idea and their taste to the table.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's funny because most of the stuff that I'd written when I was younger, I wrote alone. I didn't really work with, there was only one guy that I ended up working with, and that's because he had a studio in his house. And I didn't know anybody like that at the time. You know, this is late 80s. So he and I had written quite a few things together. Not all of it made it. But other than that, I mean, everything I'd done, I did alone. I guess I've always been a kind of a loner when I was younger, you know. I just like to work by myself and have my own thing. Not so much from the point of view of being a megalomaniac, but I do like to have control of things and the way I want it to sound or how I want it to feel, you know what I mean? So I haven't had a lot of collaborative experiences, but now as an older person, I think that's something that would benefit me much more than when I was younger. You know, I think it's something that I really want
to
check out.
Well, so I think that
see what happens.
Keeping in mind working with people doesn't necessarily mean taking away from your own vision. Sometimes they can amplify it, like
exactly.
I said earlier. And sometimes if you get the right chemistry with the people, you get more than what you would have originally expected just working alone.
I also think I'm much more open-minded about that whole thing than when I was younger, you know. I was a little bit of a control freak when it came to music back then. I was like, no, I want it to be like this. And you know, I did work with other people, and they're like, well, what about this? I'm like, well, we could use that, but it doesn't really fit with what I'm thinking about. So it was, my mind wasn't open. Like, you know, that actually got in my way on a personal level. I got in my own,
mm-hmm.
you know.
So, mm-hmm.
But nowadays, I think that I'm way more open to something like that. So, you know, I have the equipment, but I'm kind of tired of sitting in a room by myself, and I'd rather, you know, just work with other people and hear their ideas. I'm much more open to that now. Like I said, we'll see what happens. Little steps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, hey, Mom's still listening. Awesome, Mom. Love ya. I also want to, one of the things that, like I said, you do more than just one thing. You're not just about, you know, the Chinese Bird Watchers and all that, but one of the things that I find amazing is I grew up in Southern California, of course we both did, and in Southern California, being bilingual is a big plus, you know, in almost any facet of life. But you're not only bilingual, but you're also a teacher in Spain, yes?
Yeah, I mean, I'm bilingual because I've lived in Spain for 12 years. Well, I mean, that's sometimes I'm bilingual, other times I'm not. Depends on the day. And there are still some grammatical things that I have difficulty with in another language. But, yeah, I mean, I speak another language and everything. And I teach English there. So I actually learned how to speak Spanish through teaching English because I got to know, like, English grammar, and that was always fun. I really never really analyzed the language as much as I have in the last 12 years, and I find it fascinating. So I found something else intriguing about my country, or at least my language, that I really didn't appreciate before. And it also was a great help in learning Spanish as well, because you have to analyze and break down the language in codes, and I didn't remember how to do that here. But it's fun, too. I love speaking another language. I sang in Spain a few times in Spanish, and that was a lot of fun. I like it. And I don't know, we've talked about, as a group, like writing a Spanish song. And for me, I'm really interested in, say, Nacho writing his part in Spanish, and my part would be in English, the same song. We'd have a dialogue together, and I think that would really open up a lot of interest over there as well, because then people in Spain will be able to understand what we're saying. A lot of Spanish people speak English really well, so they're not unfamiliar with our topics and our songs. But then there are others, maybe the older generation, that don't know English very well, so they would really be pleasantly surprised and appreciative of a Spanish song. So that's something we're open to,
yeah,
as well.
That would bring in a larger audience, too, you know, in the future, if you guys went in that direction, you know.
Yeah,
speaking
I think
of which, speaking of which, I'm going to ask about Amaral, who is a
mm-hmm.
Spanish artist, and she's awesome. I didn't even know who this was until I saw there's a video you guys did, the Pozo, with Amaral, and it was great.
Was
she's
it?
Awesome. And then I went over and checked
out her
stuff.
That wasn't Del Pozo.
Stuff.
Del
oh, no,
Pozo, I think, this was on television. It was on Channel 2 in Spain. It was on national TV there, and we did a collaboration with them. It was a concert where we played three of our songs, and they played maybe like four of their songs. And on one of their songs, we collaborated as a group with them, and then they collaborated on one song with us. So we got a lot of great reviews from that, and a lot of great commentary and more fans, because they are a Spanish group, so they have a lot of fans in South America. So we started getting fans from other parts of the world that, well, we wouldn't have otherwise had exposure to. So that was a really good experience for us, and they're great. I mean, it's a male and a female, and they're lovely people, and they have a lot of experience under their belt in Spain, lots of albums. I think that they've got 20 years worth of hits in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like a real honor to be able to play with them. And also it's great because they were very humble and kind people. They didn't have any attitude. They were really easy to work with. It was fun. Musically speaking, they were really flexible, and they weren't like, yeah, we're the boss, we know what we're doing. They didn't have any kind of attitude like that, and they're really upper scale musically and on the charts and everything, so they get a lot of media exposure, and they were just so humble and lovely with us. So yeah, we had a really good experience with them.
Yeah, and because of that, you know, I was able to discover a new band. And of the stuff that I've heard from them, I really like their stuff. There's some good stuff there, man. I would highly recommend anybody check them out. They're Amaral, and you can find, I believe they have a Facebook page
mm-hmm.
for the band. Which
yeah, they're all over
Facebook
the.
There. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're all over Twitter. They're like normal, like everybody else, right? They're all out there on all the pages.
Yeah, all the social medias. You know, they're out there, as well as the Chinese Bird Watchers. You know, you have a Facebook page as well, and a YouTube channel is there as well. And, of course, anybody did a search for the Chinese bird watchers on YouTube, you can find a lot of cool stuff there. Man, a lot of good stuff. I love it. This is about the time we get to the show. I think you agree with me, Potato.
Mm-hmm.
And
definitely. Yeah.
It's time to get some plugs out if you want to give a shout out to anybody or get some plugs out there.
Me.
Mm-hmm. You're the guest. Get your plugs out. Let's go.
What does that mean, get my plugs out?
Oh, a plug is like, you know, talking about people that you're involved with or people that you want to give a mention on the air and stuff like that. Places you want to direct people
goodness.
To.
Oh, goodness. Oh, okay. For example, this is weird. Okay. I wasn't expecting this. In terms of directing listeners to whatever I'm interested in or
sure.
In terms of groups or design or whatever.
Well, here, let me help get you started. I will start the
mm-hmm.
plugs with, of course, Amaral. I will do that.
Okay, I understand what you're saying now. I've been living in another country for 12 years, so I don't get the lingo. I got it. Okay.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, Amaral is a great group. I would also direct people to I would definitely direct people, if they really want to see like some cool videos, and to Bacon and Cheese Films, the people who had made our videos, some of our videos. Also, Jorge Sierra has a really cool project called Eclectic, where he does films and shorts and music videos and things like that.
And also he has Schemo. Let's not forget about that.
Yeah, music with Schemo. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I really love an LA-based group. I'm just flipping out over them. And they're called Marisa Gomez and the Ghosts of Echo Park. And I went to go see them at the Cliftons on Saturday night. And she's a really dear friend who I'm getting to know more and more each year. And I'm a big fan of them. So I would definitely give a listen to them. And I think, I don't know, I'm really bad with remembering names and titles. So I'm not a really good plug girl, to be honest.
Well, let me help you. How about Joseph Font?
Well, yeah, I mentioned him earlier. I mean, he is Spanish, and he worked as a designer for a prolific firm in France. And when the founder of Del Pozo passed away a couple of years ago, he was asked to take over the design line and start making his own designs. Well, that line was already really popular and well-known in the country, but he really just flipped that around, and now he's, like, in New York. A lot of people in America are wearing his stuff, and he's even in, like, magazines here, and he's really very famous in terms of design and textiles and textures of his work, and it's a very high-end line. But also, he's a sweetheart. He lives near my neighborhood, and I see him walking around the street a lot, and he's always very helpful. He even danced with me when I was trying on one of his dresses to make the video for Dear Leonard, mm-hmm. and, well, he's a darling. And, gosh, I don't know. I mean,
got one more for you.
What?
Coccoli Company Madrid.
Oh, yeah, Coccoli Company. Well, this is really cool because Anna, who is the owner of Coccoli, which is like a vintage pop-up shop, and
mm-hmm.
she has really beautiful things, and she asked the Chinese Bird Watchers like 7 years ago to play at one of her shops, and we did. So we started really with her, and shortly thereafter, you know, we became this sort of known as like the fashionistas, like the fashion people in music, that later we kind of were like, this is weird, we're getting stuck with this sort of image, and we didn't feel comfortable with it. But she was a great help with us, and she loves our music, and it's a great shop in Madrid. And
very cool. Mm-hmm.
And that's how we got, you know, little by little, playing in, like, really interesting places, like attics, weird squares and weird towns where people eat outside and nobody's really listening to you. But we also discovered how to play our songs in a different way with a different setting, and that was really successful for us because we came up with different versions of our own songs that we otherwise wouldn't have come up with, because we had to really be adaptable to each environment we played in. We played in front of a beautiful palace for the Del Pozo runway show. We've played in a lot of really interesting places, really great, enormous. In Madrid, we played for a really big, I'm thinking in Spanish, I'm sorry.
well, go ahead and speak
venues.
Spanish, and I'm sure there's some Spanish-speaking listeners out there.
Well, this is my first English interview ever, so all the interviews that we do, they're all in Spanish, so I'm a bit rusty in terms of even thinking in English when talking about my history with the group, because it's all in Spanish. But we've had a lot of opportunity to play in some really interesting places, which I think has been great in terms of experience, flexibility, adaptability with our own songs, and bonding with each of the group members. And that's why now when we play big stages and with great sound and wonderful lights and everything's like boom and poof and a lot of big audience. And I think that's why we connect so well together, because we had really humble beginnings, which I think a lot of people can vouch for that. You know, we all start with humble beginnings most of the time, but I think it really builds character and it builds a great bond between the people you're playing with. And it gives you confidence because you had a lot of time to experiment in sort of safe places before you had like a sold out show. In fact, every single show we've ever played, I'm not tooting our horn or anything like that, but somehow, I don't know if it was just word of mouth or the style of our music that people really connected to, but every single show we've done in Madrid anyway, where I live and where our band is based, has been completely sold out. And we've even sometimes had to reject people. So, we've had a lot of experience with that. But yeah, so Cocoli, she was really our first, you know, show that we did.
Yeah, awesome. And then she's still a supporter, of course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Nice. Well, that was an awesome interview, I got to say. And by the way, if anybody's wondering why it took me so long to book this guest, it's because she lives in Madrid, Spain. And for her to make a phone call to do an hour or 2 hours on my show is pretty astronomical financially. And just the timing, she's 10 hours ahead, so it's really hard to even schedule. So we've been working on doing the show during a time when she's here in California on a visit. And this year kind of fell into place, and it finally happened. And I'm so happy that I've had you on my show. It's awesome. And by the way, Heather, you've opened doors for me for our future guests as well, which is something that's great. This is all about networking, and people listen to the show, people talk about the show, other people say, hey, that's cool, man. And it opens more doors for me. So as I've told past guests, you know, doing the show for me is a hobby, but it's a symbiotic relationship between me and the guests that I have on and my listeners. So it all works. And it keeps growing. It keeps growing, which
I'm
amazed. And,
for artists to get the exposure and for people to be interested in the work that we're doing. And if you are interested in learning about lots of different people doing different things, because you don't just have people on who do music, you have a lot of different people who are into different things like film and, I don't know, just a wide
plethora. Oh, I've had everything from... I've had DJs, I've had filmmakers, directors, actresses, actors, book writers, book publishers. I like to have a good, well-rounded, it's all in the entertainment industry, but different facets. You know, I like to expose myself to as much of that as possible because it's also fascinating to me. I'm like the fan who gets to talk to these people. You know, I'm always looking for an autograph. Like, I'm the guy that still wants to get the autographs and stuff, and it's just, for me, it's always an amazing experience, and I love doing that.
Well, it's great, and also you have, you know, your questions that you ask, because you're not just coming into the show with a piece of paper that you copied from the internet, which those are very common, where you get these sort of questions that you get. Well, I get the feeling like they just ask everybody, so it's very impersonal, and sometimes they don't even know the name of the album or the single. So for me, I always find that really off-putting because, well, why am I talking? It's sort of ridiculous if you don't know what you're talking about. And it makes me feel like they themselves aren't appreciative of the work, which they don't have to like it per se, but at least know something about it before you talk to groups. Like if you talk to a radio show and they have people on all the time, they're not going to be able to research as much as you do, for example, but they can at least get the name of the title of the album okay, you know.
Yeah,
or the group members in the group, for example. So, yeah, you did a really good job, and keep doing it. And hopefully Marisa from Marisa Gomez and the Echoes, I keep saying the Echoes from Ghost Park, but Marisa Gomez and the Ghosts of Echo Park will come on and talk to you too, because I know that she's eager to talk about her work as well, which is really interesting.
We just met with her and her husband last night and had dinner, and it was an amazing experience. And I've made a couple of new friends, and it's awesome, man. So networking is a great thing. Great thing.
Yeah.
So,
well, I got to get the potatoes off the stove.
Oh, are they boiling?
They're boiling.
All right. I want to say I've enjoyed this very much. Thank you so much, Heather Joelle, for coming on the show. Of course, this has been Baldhead Radio. Oh, I want to say one more thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do have to take you to the airport in the morning to head back to Madrid, and I'm already starting to get a little choked up. So just that's out there.
Oh, well, I'll open the door here and give you a hug in a second.
Oh, yeah, we can do that, huh? Awesome. All right, everybody, you guys have a great rest of your week and have an awesome weekend. This has been Baldhead Radio with your host, Brett Crusoe.